Andy, it's great to have you on the show, and of course, Helloween coming out with a new album entitled Straight Out of Hell. And Andy, it's great to have you on yet again, as we have so many years, and you know, talk about what the band currently has going on right now.
Well, in the very moment, we actually wanted to do some holidays after production. We always do some week's break. But this time, it seems like little important things are in between the holidays. I mean, we're happy and fortunate that we may play great festivals like Loud Park in Japan. This was a great honor. We played it last week. It was great. Then December, we have a festival in Germany, which is very important. January, we want to do that 70,000 tons of metal on the cruiser, starting in Miami, going through the Caribbean, some Caribbean islands, I think Turk Islands and Caicos Islands. So this will definitely be great, but no real calming down or something like that, because you constantly have to stay more or less in the rehearsal room.
Well, talk about the new album, Andy, and you know, tell everybody about it. It's called Straight Out of Hell, and you know, just tell the fans in general about the upcoming Helloween album coming out in January.
Well, for me, I'm not very objective, so my subjective opinion is that the new album would probably be a bridge from the Seven Sinners to maybe some 80s, old 80s tunes. It's even a bit faster and harder than the Seven Sinners album, but you won't probably realize it by listening to it for the first time, because it's more positive. When there's something more positive, it doesn't seem to be faster, for example, but it is. At the end of the day, when we counted through the songs, we realized there's much more faster songs on the new album than on the last album, though it doesn't appear that fast. So it's a very strange thing that goes on in the brain. When you listen to more positive tunes, you don't actually feel them as hard as the Seven Sinners stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, Andy, you wrote quite a few songs on this record, but the one thing that was really difficult for me, again, was really hard for me to, and I'm going to mention this a couple times, it was really hard for me to figure out who wrote what. And as long as I've known you guys, it was just that difficult for me. And talk about all the songs that you wrote on this album. And I really love Nabatea, because that is a song that I really like, because I'm a huge history buff. And talk about that.
Well, Nabatea is the opening track of the album, which is a bit strange for me to see a 7-minute song at the being the first title on an album. But yeah, that's how everybody decided, and because we are a democracy, that's how it works. Nabatea is, it's talking about this old myth, Nabatea, which is not a myth anymore, because the beginning of the 20th century, they found in the middle of the Jordan Desert, they found the old metropole, Petra, it's called. So when they found the metropole, they knew, Nabatea hasn't been a myth, it's been reality. It existed around about 3,000 years to 2,000 years ago, and what was so great about it is that it's probably been the first democracy ever. They had no slaves, they had no real rulers or dictatorship or whatever. They really had something like a democracy going on, where the people voted what's being done, what's not being done, and all the politics lay in the hand of the people, which was great. And they never brought wars to other lands, which is nearly unbelievable, because so far, coming from Europe, this is, every European country has someone brought a war to other land. And when you learn that 3,000 years ago there was a land who lived in peace and still prosperous without slaves, and it was fantastic, this story. And when I saw the pictures of the old metropole, Petra, when you Google it, it's unbelievable when you see these cathedrals kind of carved in the red stone. So this is fantastic. Yeah, worth writing a story about it. Then what's the next song I've written? Waiting for the Thunder. That's probably a very Pink Cream style, from my old band style song.
When I saw the title, I kept thinking Rolling Down a Thunder.
Yeah, but it's definitely not Rolling Down a Thunder. It could have been something like on a Pink Cream album, or it could be something like the predecessor of If I Could Fly on the Dark Ride from Halloween. Yeah, it's that typical Andy and distorted guitars and a piano over it. Sometimes I really love that. Typical Andy song, I would say. Then, it was this Wanna Be God. That was an accident, actually, because I have recorded the song in a normal metal way, like two guitars, left and right, and very aggressive playing. And actually, during listening through the demo, I thought something is wrong here, so I wanted to solo the drums and just listen to the drums. Accidentally, the vocals were in solo too, so I just listened to the drums and the vocals. No guitars at all, no bass, nothing. And I thought, hey man, that's cool. That doesn't sound like needing guitars or something like that. So when I listened to it without any guitars, just drums and vocals, I thought, okay, maybe this could be a song I could finally dedicate to Freddie Mercury, which was one of my big idols singing-wise. And never had a chance to dedicate a song because Halloween is so far away from everything that Queen would ever have done. But this time I thought, okay, drums and vocals, this could be something like We Will Rock You style. And so I finished it, just the way it is now. And a very shortly composed a little part in the end, because We Will Rock You finishes with a guitar. And this I wanted to have too, that the people realize that this is kind of arranged like We Will Rock You, and now being dedicated to Freddie was fun. What else did I write? Make Fire Catch the Fly. That was fun because I had the lyrics already, because I thought it's so funny to actually compare ourselves, the boys, with a fly who's too stupid to actually not flying again into the fire, and your wings are melting and everything is like, it's stupid again and again, like a stupid fly when it comes to when we are the flies and the girls are the flame, you know, so we are flying again and again. I had this lyrics and I thought it's beautiful, so I just wanted to write a song around it, which I finally did. Did I write anything else? I don't think so. Oh, yeah, Live Now. Live Now was actually a song, a very poppy song in the very beginning, and it probably would not have fit onto a Halloween album because it was way too much pop. Sasha loved the song and said, yeah, he would probably have some hard guitars, some riffs in his mind which would perfectly fit for this Live Now song. And so I told him, yeah, look what you can do. So he came back with the arrangement. You listen to it now and on the album. That's pretty much arranged by Sasha. So you could say it's an Andy-Sasha co-writing thing, Live Now. And we wanted to have it on the album because it's got that positive thing, like that message, live now. Say it loud, live now. We really loved that because we wanted to have that positive vibe going on the album. Simply because when we release the album in January, it would mean that we definitely have survived 2012, so we should look very positively into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody thinks the world's going to end.
Yeah, obviously that's why we postponed the release from the new album. Because when the world's going to end, we don't need to rehearse.
Now let's talk about Sasha here for a minute, because, you know, he wrote quite a few songs on this album that I really, really liked. I love the song World of War, for example. But, you know, he wrote a lot of great stuff. And, you know, he's been in the band for almost 10 years now. And, you know, let's talk about him for a second and how important he is to this band. Because, you know, to me, it seems like with him in a lineup, you have another great songwriter. And talk about how important Sasha really is to the lineup of Halloween.
Well, super important, simply because he is a very important songwriter. If he would not be in the band, it would mean that it's only me, Marcus, Wyke, who would have to come up again with all the songs for the album. It's doable, but when you have a fourth member and a great songwriter too, it takes away because you know he's capable of writing four or five songs, then I'm seeing myself always in a situation that I can't come up with four or five songs, which means Wyke and Marcus, at the end of the day, they would have to contribute only two or three songs, and we would already have enough to choose out of 15 or 16 songs. It makes it so comfortable, yeah. I mean, there's no stress, no pressure, because you know there are four people now with Sasha, all capable of writing songs. I think that's very healthy for a band. I think mainly bands sometimes split apart because there's one or two main songwriters, and then the fight starts. Who is getting the rights? Who is getting the money? Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
But if you are a band with four songwriters, I mean, why should you discuss? Everybody's writing songs, so you just don't author rights or who is actually having the publishing money, because at the end of the day, everybody's writing songs. Maybe this time I write five songs, and Marcus only two songs, but next time Marcus writes five songs, and maybe I only write three songs. So it's pretty cool, because there's no base to actually argue, or no base to discuss, because when everybody's writing songs, everybody receives the money, so there's actually no need to argue. Perfect.
Now, you obviously, the new album is called Straight Out of Hell, and just out of curiosity, why did the band pick that particular title to name this record?
Well, simply because when we survived 2012, or even if we are the lonesome survivors, because, I mean, they are not quite clear if the whole world goes down completely, and if mankind would be completely eradicated, or if some do survive, and if we survive with a new album, this would be Straight Out of Hell, definitely. So it's a bit, you should look at it with a blink of an eye, definitely. Mm-hmm. Because the whole 2012 story is, for us, definitely not true. It will not become true, but it's nice to talk about it.
Well, Andy, I can tell you that you talked about earlier about playing some festivals, doing some tours and stuff like that, and I have to tell you, the tour with Gamma Ray in 2008 was such a great package, and I do notice that you obviously have decided to pursue touring with them again. And, you know, why did you decide to tour with Gamma Ray again, and, you know, talk about why it's worked out for you so well?
Well, it did so great 4 years ago that it was already in our mind that we could do that again. Now, through the last tour, when we toured with Stratovarius, there were so many people who were actually blogging it or sending it onto the homepage that they really would love to see this tour again. And there were hundreds who did not have the chance to see the show and asked if we could do that show again, because they would definitely like to see it as well. So pretty much because the people wanted to have it.
Now, getting to experience a few shows in that tour, Andy, I have to tell you that it looked like the band was having so much fun playing live, you know, with this current lineup. Plus, you know, going on stage with Gamma Ray afterwards, I thought was really great. It was great for the fans, but it also seemed like it was a lot of fun for all of the members of both bands. And that's really important to me, and obviously probably important to you. And, you know, how much fun did you have playing on stage with them?
Well, it was a lot of fun, but mainly because of Kai. Because you know, Kai had to wait nearly 1.5 or even 1 hour 40 until he finally made his stage. And every night he was so completely bored backstage waiting for his final appearance on stage. So it was very nice to see every night. It was it's super interesting to find out if he's completely drunk or if he's not drunk. But most of the time he was completely drunk when he finally hit stage, you know, because he started to drink because of being bored backstage. It was a lot of fun. And then even, I mean, backstage you should see the boys. I mean, they are all a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah, I saw.
There's always something going on, so. Yeah, I mean, should be fun again, definitely.
Now, one of the things I notice, Andy, and you know, I've noticing with the band over the years, it's very easy for me to really look at Helloween and say, you know what, you guys are still touring, you guys are playing a lot of great shows, you guys still have a pretty good attendance at all of your shows, and you know, a lot of bands have struggled with that, but you guys seem to have adapted pretty well to the current musical climate. And how have you adapted, and what's, you know, what has been so successful for Helloween? What has really helped you out through, I guess, the dark ages of the music industry?
Well, we do definitely have to compensate the missing CD sales, because even for us, it broke down drastically. obviously the market is getting harder and harder because everybody is trying to compensate playing live. That's where it becomes so important that you have a name, that you have a kind of brand name in the world. And this is something I follow with some doubt if it will definitely work out for the newcomer bands for the future. I'm scared of that each and every newcomer band who is getting famous is actually sons of rich fathers or something like that, because nowadays no record company has the budget to actually do a proper production for their band, do proper promotions. Only if somebody takes a lot of money in his hand and goes out there and makes promotion, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just scared that the future of music will only be people, rich people who can afford to make themselves stars or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what will happen the next years, because when there are no CD sales and no name band has no budget, it's without CD sales the record companies don't earn enough money to actually take some money and promote some bands, build some bands up from the scratch. I think this will not take place anymore in the future.
Well, it seems like with record labels back in the day, with no internet, it was easy for them to get large groups of people to move in one direction. And, it's not the case anymore. The internet really spreads things out and makes it difficult for record labels to do that, if you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, as long as the people are not educated enough out there and realize that this is actually cost money when you want to do a proper production with a good sound, this costs money. And if the people don't realize that stealing CD on the internet is pretty much the same than me walking into a pharmacy and stealing some aspirins,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's pretty much the same. But a lot of people don't realize. I mean, it's getting better. I think there are more and more people who are educated and actually understand what it's all about. But I think it's not enough. You know. I think it's not enough.
Especially with the internet, Andy, because with the internet, it almost seems like you have to fight with hundreds of thousands of bands that normally would not have been there a long time ago and to really stand out. And it's much more difficult nowadays, especially with the internet reaching so many more people and anybody can use it and there's no regulation on it. It's very difficult for bands to really stand out these days.
Yeah, absolutely. But in earlier days, it was pretty much the same. But you had a record company who tried to bring you onto support as a support band and onto stage with bigger acts, and you know this all cost money, lots of money.
Yeah.
But that's the way it has been done, because you have a promising band, you think this band could be great. Okay, you work for it, you promote it, you send it on tour as a support act. This is all not taking place anymore. Maybe it's still taking place in the States, because the United States, you have to see, they are like over 280 million people, I think. So this is a very, very big market in itself. But when you, for example, take Europe, has 340 million, I think, but you have to divide it with all the countries you've got. So you have a record company for each and every country, even though it has only 16 million inhabitants. You have your own record company there, blah, blah, blah. So it's much, much, much more difficult to do something out of Europe. And because there's no great big company who has 280 million people as a market, like U.S. American companies, for example, you don't find that here in Europe. So they simply don't have the money.
Well, looking back at the band's history, Andy, one of the things I think is great and has really worked out for you is the fact that Charlie Bauerfein has been such an integral part of Helloween's musical career since 2000. And, you know, he's been around for 13 years and quite a few albums. And, you know, it's the longest run that you guys have had as far as a producer goes for records. And, you know, why do you keep working with Charlie? I mean, what is it about him that keeps you working with him? Because he almost seems like a sixth member of the band and just as important to your sound as you guys are.
Well, Charlie is definitely a friend, meanwhile, of everybody. But I think the main reason is confidence. So through the years, you have that much confidence that you don't have that pressure or that feeling something could go wrong with a new guy. Maybe he would do a great job too, or maybe even better. You never know. But you don't know the new guy. If you now imagine we would take a new producer, this guy would be a newbie for the band. So you would definitely have this pressure in the back of your mind. Oh, can he do it? And you know, this is something, I don't know, that causes stomach ache. So it's always been stomach ache whenever I had a new producer. It took quite, at least 2 or 3 weeks to finally find out he is capable of doing that. Or we had one producer who was not able of doing it. Well, you really see at the end of the day that you have a bad product. When we recorded some B-sides in Holland, this was, I don't say the name, it would not be fair, but this guy was definitely not capable of doing it, you know. At the end of the day, it sounded like he was not the right guy. Now imagine this on a real production with a real album. This could mean your future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too much of a risk, actually, to change a great man with somebody who is maybe not. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to learn. I don't want to find out then after production that this was the wrong man. So I'd rather stay with the guy whom I trust.
And again, the formula of Charlie Bauerfeind with you guys and what you have going on, I think has worked out really well. I mean, to me, the last few Helloween releases, the last 3 or 4 have been the ones I've listened to the most, say, since they've come out. And, you know, every time I think of Helloween, I really go in and think, oh, these last 3, 4 albums are really great. And, you know, I think Charlie Bauerfeind is just a great, great guy to have in your camp.
Charlie will definitely be the man forever, I hope, as long as he's healthy and as long as he likes the band. Absolutely, he will be the man, definitely. And you've seen on the new album now that he's also capable of changing little things. So the production sounds a bit harder even than the rest of his production. So he can change. He can do little things. But he always needs to be in the ballpark. I mean, that's for sure. We don't want to suddenly sound like, what do I know, like Anthrax, you know. So it's a great sound for Anthrax, but it would not be a great sound for us. And so we still have to try to stay in the ballpark. And Charlie knows definitely how to do that.
So do you plan on coming over to play in the U.S. For this next tour?
Definitely, we come to the States. So far, I know we have only 6 or 7 shows in the Metropoles. Maybe there's coming more, but then it will be 2 parts if there's coming more.
Yeah.
Because the schedule is very tough. So we're probably coming in from South Central America to U.S., then to Canada, which means we only have several weeks for the States.
Andy, you've been around quite a long time now and been doing this a long time, and obviously we talked about the Internet earlier about it affecting bands standing out. And, you know, if there's a new band out there right now that you had to give advice to as far as doing well in this climate, you know, what would it be? What advice would you give to a new band these days?
I think nowadays it's super important that you have something like and even if it's a new member in the band who is only doing IT stuff, you know, I think this is super important nowadays. A guy who knows how to handle IT, internet promoting, and who's constantly on the people, and you know, I think this is very, very important. I mean, you have to look at it from the positive side. You can have your own promoter nowadays if you have an IT guy who is actually only doing that. In earlier days, you needed somebody who was most of the time occupied in a record company who's doing the promotion worldwide. Nowadays, you can do it if you have a guy who knows how to do it. You can do it by yourself. So that's a plus. The minus is you don't have the budget.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I mentioned before, Andy, it's one of those things that when I listened to this album, it was very, very difficult for me to figure out which band member wrote what song. And for as long as I've known you guys, this is the most difficult album. And to me, again, it shows like the band is on the same page. It shows you that everybody has the same vision. And I have to tell you, Andy, this one song that surprised me which I could have I would have told everybody this is definitely has to be an Andy Daris song, is the song Hold Me in Your Arms. And I cannot believe that Sasha actually wrote that and that you didn't.
Yeah.
You know,
I was actually very happy when Sasha came up with a song like that, because the last years I'm not into ballads anymore, and honestly I try to, but I can't. It's in a moment, maybe next year. But the last 3-4 productions, I was not very much into ballad writing. Though I like to listen to ballads, so when he came with his ballad, I thought, oh, great, beautiful, let's do it, yeah, EPA.
Aside from a couple of songs, Andy, that were pretty obvious, like Years was written by Vikey, or, you know, stuff like that, it was really, really hard for me to figure out who wrote what. And it seems like the musical chemistry of the band has gotten so good that, to me, I think that's great. I think it's just awesome.
I think 60% you could say of the album is very, very much the four of us, the four songwriters. Everybody learned from the other, and this is something very nice when you see that Sasha picks up some stuff that I do or Wykie does. I do pick up some stuff from Sasha and Wykie or Marcus, and vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, through the years, this automatically happens. You try to learn from each other. If you like the other guy, then you definitely like to actually use his strength too, you know. So I think this is also a good sign for good chemistry.
Well, I noticed that the album is very heavy and fast in quite a few places. But the one thing I did notice about this record that seems to be more prevalent on this album than past Halloween albums is the use of keyboards. And not saying it's a bad thing, I'm just saying it's a lot different, and it really adds a lot to these songs. It really adds to the music quite a bit, more so than, say, it probably would have added to past albums. And, you know, was this a direction you decided to go in?
Not necessarily. But, you know, it's always a nice surprise when you have that Matthias guy is a German bloke. He is actually having great ideas, and honestly, 50% of all his ideas you have to mute. It's too much. But nevertheless, this is also such a great stuff, such great ideas, that you definitely want to use as much as possible.
Well, I have one last question for you, Andy, and obviously I end off every interview on the show with this. You know, what do you have to say to the fans out there that will be checking this out and looking forward to hopefully you guys coming over here to the States? But, you know, what do people have to look forward to? And, you know, any last words for all the fans that will be listening to this interview?
Well, especially for the U.S. fans, you have to actually forgive us for not being there for the last tour. We'll come for this album, definitely. Hopefully we do more than 6 or 7 shows in the U.S. to actually somehow enter the middle of the U.S. as well, because so far you're always playing East Coast or West Coast, and then you say goodbye. I can't actually do that by myself, but I strongly hope that our booking agency is looking into that. If not even doing a second part of a U.S. tour, then after Canada or after Asia. But nevertheless, we'll be there, and thanks for waiting.